This is Lynn Curry reading the Bloomington Pantograph for Tuesday, August 4th, 2020. Local news. 5 COVID-19 cases confirmed at McLean County Jail by Paul Swike. Bloomington. The number of people associated with the McLean County Jail with confirmed cases of COVID-19 has increased to 5, Sheriff John Sandage said Monday. Sandage told the Pantograph that 3 inmates, 1 correctional officer, and 1 counselor have tested positive for the novel virus. Last Wednesday, Sandage confirmed the first case of COVID at the jail, an inmate who had been awaiting transfer to the Illinois Department of Corrections. Sandage said Monday that none of the 5 people have required hospitalization. All inmates, correctional officers, and staff of the McLean County Detention Facility have been tested for COVID, and at least 90% of the test results are back, Sandage said. The county jail has 230 inmates, about 70 correctional officers and staff, and 3 counselors, he said. Cleaning and sanitizing in the county jail, which began when McLean County had its first COVID case in March, continues, Sandage said. In addition, inmate movement has been restricted, also in an effort to reduce potential spread of the virus, he said. Every person who tests negative will be tested again every 5 days until there are no COVID cases in the jail, Sandage said. Quote, we were well aware that eventually we would have a positive COVID case, Sandage said. It was unavoidable. We are fortunate that it is not widespread. The correctional officers and medical staff have done an outstanding job in mitigating this, end quote. Sandage's confirmation came on the same day that the McLean County Health Department announced 7 new COVID cases, bringing the county's total to 552 people who have had confirmed cases of the novel virus since March. 2 more COVID-19 deaths in LaSalle County. 7 new cases in McLean County by Paul Swike. Bloomington. COVID-19 continued its late summer growth in central Illinois on Monday with 2 more deaths and 47 new cases reported in LaSalle County and additional cases in McLean and several surrounding counties. Several additional cases associated with the McLean County Jail also were confirmed Monday. 7 more McLean County residents have COVID-19, but the county's positivity rate, the percentage of residents tested who have tested positive for the virus, remained 2.1%, McLean County Health Department reported Monday. A total of 552 people from McLean County have been diagnosed with COVID-19 since March 19th. Quote, we are asking that everyone continue to work together to help our community stay safe and well, McLean County Health Department Administrator Jessica McKnight said, adding, remember the 3 W's, washing our hands, wearing a mask or face covering, and watching our distance, end quote. LaSalle County Health Department reported that a man in his 80s and a woman in her 90s had died of COVID, bringing to 20 the number of COVID-related deaths in that county, about an hour north of Bloomington Normal. LaSalle County also announced on Monday 47 new COVID cases, bringing that county's number of COVID diagnoses since March to 557. Ages of the 47 people ranged from children to people in their 90s. Of the 557 cases, 256 have recovered. In Tazewell County, the number of COVID cases increased by 22, bringing that county's total to 390, said Sarah Sparkman, County Health Department Communications Manager. of the 390, 226 have recovered. Among other area counties with increases on Monday included Logan, 4 new cases, up to 88, Livingston, 2 new cases Monday, up to 94, as well as Woodford, Ford, DeWitt, and Piatt counties. The 7 additional cases in McLean County mean that 292 county residents have tested positive for the virus since the increase in cases began at the beginning of July. In McLean County, the county's positivity rate of the more than 26,000 tests since March remained 2.1%. The rolling 7-day positivity rate through Sunday was 1.9%, the health department reported. Of the total 552 cases, 434 have recovered, 13 more than Sunday. 101 are isolating at home, 4 fewer than Sunday, and 2 are hospitalized, 2 fewer than Sunday, the health department reported. In addition, 15 county residents have died of the virus. The most recent deaths were reported on July 7th and 9th. Illinois Department of Public Health reported on Monday 1,298 new cases of COVID-19 statewide, including 10 additional deaths. Central Illinois fatalities were the 2 deaths in LaSalle County and a Peoria County woman in her 70s. The statewide positivity rate for cases as a percent of total tests for the 7-day period ending Sunday was 4%, IDPH said. As of Sunday night, 1,418 people in Illinois were hospitalized with COVID, 347 in intensive care units. A total of 371 people were tested at the McLean County Fairgrounds testing site on Sunday, according to the county's Emergency Management Agency. The test site, 1106 Interstate Drive in Bloomington, is open 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. daily, except holidays, to anyone who can perform the nasal self-swab test. In addition, McLean County Health Department's 3rd rural mobile testing site will be open 9 a.m. to noon Thursday at 103 South Buchanan Street, Hayworth. ISU police recover car stolen from Bloomington repair shop by Kelsey Watznauer. Bloomington. A normal man is charged with possession of a stolen vehicle after he was stopped by an Illinois State University police officer Sunday, police said. According to the probable cause statement read in court Monday, a normal resident dropped her vehicle at an auto repair shop in Bloomington, and the next day it was reported missing. ISU police told prosecutors Trayvon D. Griffin, 18, was stopped after he was seen driving the vehicle on School Street without the headlights on. The vehicle was returned to the registered owner after Griffin's arrest, and nothing was reported missing from inside, prosecutors said. Griffin was released on a $20,000 personal recognizance bond and ordered not to have contact with the victim or the auto shop. An arraignment was scheduled for September 11th. A booking photo for Griffin was not immediately available Monday afternoon. Normal Town Council rejects bike share proposal by Sierra Henry. Normal. The Normal Town Council rejected Monday a proposal for a bike share program through Gotcha Mobility, LLC. The Charleston, South Carolina company proposed a 3-year bike share program that would launch in Normal next spring with 200 bikes. Council unanimously rejected the program in favor of potentially seeking different vendors. The program would cost the town $300,000 annually, but Gotcha offered seeking sponsorship and advertising to offset the cost to the town, adding that rider revenues were expected to cover a portion of that amount. Normal, in coordination with Illinois State University and Carl Broman Medical Center, participated in a bike share program through Zagster, a Cambridge, Massachusetts company, from 2017 to 2019. Bike share facilities were placed at Carl Broman, the Route 66 Visitor Center, Connie Link Amphitheater, Illinois Wesleyan University, Illinois State University, and in Uptown Normal. That program's estimated cost was $87,000 per year, with annual $10,000 contributions from the Advocate Broman Foundation. A selection committee comprised of town staff and representatives of Carl Broman Medical Center and Illinois State University recommended council to reject the Gotcha proposal due to the financial risk it posed if sponsorship and advertising revenue was not raised. In other business, Councilwoman Karen Smith addressed several concerns she received regarding a zoning update at One Normal Plaza planned unit development. "I am happy to see residents active in the discussions around this," said Smith, who elaborated on the process for the zoning update. The proposed zoning amendment divides the plaza into four sub-areas with zoning codes tailored based on the pre-existing areas to attract certain businesses. The amendment will be discussed at the September 10th Planning Commission meeting. Three dead in Woodford County crash involving ambulance, by Kevin Barlow. Benson. Police say three people are dead after a Woodford County crash between a vehicle and an ambulance. Illinois State Police released a statement early Saturday indicating the crash occurred at about 1:57 a.m. on Illinois Route 116 and County Road 2400 East, just a few miles east of Benson in Woodford County. Killed in the crash were Morgan Ryder, 20, of Gridley, who was driving the vehicle, as well as 19-year-old Jared Segerman of Minonk and Seth Unruh, 19, of Pattonsburg, who were both passengers. Police said Ryder's vehicle was traveling southbound on County Road 2400 East, approaching Illinois Route 116, when it drove into the path of the ambulance that was traveling westbound on the highway. The ambulance struck the vehicle on its driver's side. A third passenger in the car, a 21-year-old Minonk man, was taken to an area hospital with serious injuries. The ambulance driver, a 42-year-old man from LaSalle, was also taken to a hospital, along with a patient being transported, a 78-year-old woman from Ottawa. Their conditions are not known. A 25-year-old Earlville woman was also in the ambulance, but was not injured. The roadway was closed for about 6 hours, but was reopened at about 8 a.m. Three arrested on drug charges in McLean County, by Kevin Barlow. Bloomington. Two men and a woman faced drug charges after their arrests Friday evening in McLean County. Shannon Mosley, 37, was charged in court Saturday with two counts of unlawful delivery of a controlled substance, class 1 felonies, and one count of unlawful possession of a controlled substance with intent to deliver, class 2 felony. Mosley remains jailed in lieu of posting $10,035 bond. Brian McDim, 27, was charged with possession of a controlled substance with the intent to deliver, class 1 felony, and unlawful possession of cocaine, class 4 felony. He was released on a 40 on a $50,000 personal recognizance bond. Brianna Turner was charged with two counts of unlawful delivery of a controlled substance, class 1 felonies, and one count of unlawful possession of a controlled substance with intent to deliver, a class 2 felony. She was released on a $50,000 personal recognizance bond. All three are scheduled for an arraignment on August 14th. Cause of Tawanda Business Fire Under Investigation by Kevin Barlow. Tawanda. An investigation is continuing into the cause of a fire that gutted a Tawanda business on Monday, sending up smoke that could be seen from miles away. There were no injuries in the fire at Precision Tooling, 304 South Quincy Street. Crews were dispatched around 11:30 a.m. to what was described as a working structure fire. Quote, "When we got there, we had heavy fire," said Tawanda Fire Chief Brett Lucian. "The first engine on the scene started an attack, but with the amount of fire we had, we called in mutual aid departments immediately," end quote. Those included Bloomington, Normal, Hudson, Lexington, and some tenders, a type of truck that specializes in the transportation of water from a water source to a fire scene, from departments in Cooksville, Chenoa, and Washington. Quote, "We had two aerial trucks, one from Normal and one from Bloomington, helping us out," he added. "It took about 2 hours to get it under control," end quote. Lucian did not know how many employees were at the site and said the fire's cause would likely be under investigation for a while. Smoke and flames could be seen coming from the roof of the single-story building minutes after the first call went out. Employees and neighbors were outside watching firefighters at the scene. Quote, "The employees were examined by Lexington Fire, but nobody was transported," end quote, he said. T.J. McBartry, an employee, said he and his coworkers were having a lunch break when they smelled smoke and safely evacuated the building. The business owner told a Pentagraph reporter at the scene that he didn't want to comment. Tammy and Frank Kmicek's backyard faces Precision Tooling Group, and their pool and two sheds are just feet away from the back portion of the building, which did not appear to have exterior damage on Monday afternoon. Tammy Kmicek said her husband was at work, and she ran to her neighbor's house to help them evacuate as soon as she saw the flames. Quote, "We were just unloading our groceries and immediately evacuated our pets, and then I went next door to help," end quote, she said. Kmicek and her son, Corey, safely removed their family dog and two cats from the home. State news. No mask, no distance. Pandemic wedding horrors for vendors. By Leanne Itali, The Associated Press. New York. Wedding planners, photographers, and other bridal vendors who make the magic happen have a heap of new worries in the middle of the pandemic. No mask weddings, rising guest counts, and venues not following the rules. Now that weddings have slowly cranked up under a patchwork of ever-shifting state and local restrictions, horror stories from vendors are rolling in. Many are desperate to work after the coronavirus put an abrupt end to their incomes and feel compelled to put on their masks, grab their cameras, and hope for the best. No mask weddings, no social distancing, and dance floors prohibited in many states have been the talk of online groups for vendors around the country. Quote, "People have worked in venues outright, looking the other way on masks and size, end quote, said photographer Susan Stripling in New York. Reports of COVID-19 outbreaks traced to weddings remain rare. One wedding was shut down by local officials at a San Francisco church. The nearly 100 guests had been instructed by the bridal couple to avoid the public entrance and go in through an underground parking garage instead. Photographer Cherie Schrader in Chicago said she felt deceived when she showed up for a July wedding with 165 unmasked people indoors after being assured all safety precautions would be taken. There was no social distancing. The crowd mingled at a happy hour, and the dance floor was lively. Quote, I was told by the bride that it was an indoor-outdoor venue, but it was 95 degrees and they never opened the doors, she said. The tables were at the most 3 feet apart, end quote, she said, noting masks should have been required at all times under those conditions. Quote, it looked like a normal wedding pre-COVID, end quote, Schrader said. The rule for indoor gatherings in her state was half a venue's capacity or up to 50 people, whichever was lower, she said. Schrader, wearing two masks, said she forced the bridal party outside for formal pictures in the heat and humidity. Quote, they complained because they were all sweating, but I was spending the least amount of time as possible inside, end quote, she said. Schrader entered the venue, which she said she would not name out of fear of professional retribution, for short stints to shoot special moments, such as the cake cutting. An associate photographer voluntarily remained inside to work. Quote, I truly love my brides and grooms, and then to be pressured to risk my life is extremely disappointing, end quote, she said. I have an 80-year-old mom, end quote. Alex Alvarez, a wedding planner in Chicago, said she and other vendors often have no practical recourse to recoup deposits or full payments if they pull out. She has a long scheduled wedding with a guest list of about 100 planned for October in Wisconsin, where state health officials recently advised residents to avoid gatherings of more than 10 through late August. The couple had postponed once and might do it again, as some couples have done 3 times or more. That, vendor said, has helped drive a desire among brides and grooms to just get it done, with many choosing small micro weddings instead of the larger affairs they had dreamed of. Whether the weddings are large or small, indoor or outdoor, masks have become a sticking point for photos and video. Some couples argue that masks spoil their visuals and are banning them altogether. Others are making them optional. Still more are going the opposite route, wearing bedazzled satin and lace masks to match their gowns. Illinois Attorney General files brief against restrictive voting law in Florida by Raymond Troncoso. Springfield. Illinois Attorney General Kwame Raoul was co-lead on a court brief filed Monday by a coalition of 20 attorneys general in opposition to a Florida law that makes it more difficult for previously incarcerated individuals to vote, according to his office. Raoul and Washington, D.C. Attorney General Carl A. Racine led the group that filed an amicus brief in federal court supporting a lawsuit challenging a Florida law that prevents previously incarcerated residents from voting unless they pay all legal financial obligations tied to their sentence. In a news release distributed Monday to announce the filing, Raoul called Florida's law a, quote, poll tax, unquote, which was a Jim Crow era policy intended to keep Black Americans from voting. Quote, pay-to-vote laws are discriminatory and serve mainly to suppress Black and other minority voters, Raoul said in the news release. I will continue to fight discrimination in any form, which includes ensuring that people who have completed their sentences regain their fundamental voting rights, end quote. The coalition's filing posed 3 arguments, that the law harms low-income residents and does not encourage payment, that it disproportionately impacts Black and Latino communities, and that expanding voting rights for those previously incarcerated promotes reintegration and public safety. Florida voters approved a state constitutional amendment in 2018 that automatically restored voting rights to felons who completed all terms of their sentence, including parole or probation. The Florida legislature later added the financial obligations to the law, but a federal judge blocked the enforcement of those restrictions. In July, however, the 11th Circuit Court of Appeals overturned that decision and issued a temporary order blocking felons who have not paid those obligations from registering or voting. In an unsigned order in July, the U.S. Supreme Court declined to block the law. The majority did not release a written explanation. But Justices Sonia Sotomayor, Ruth Bader Ginsburg, and Aleta Kagan authored a dissent citing disenfranchisement close to an election. The appellate case in the 11th Circuit Court of Appeals is still ongoing, with oral arguments set for August 18th, the date of the Florida primary election. Florida's amendment would have given 1.4 million felons the right to cast a ballot, but the added restriction of paying legal obligations removed eligibility from hundreds of thousands of those voters, according to expert testimony in the case. Other attorneys general joining the brief alongside Raul and Racine come from California, Colorado, Connecticut, Delaware, Hawaii, Maryland, Massachusetts, Michigan, Minnesota, Nevada, New Jersey, New Mexico, New York, Oregon, Pennsylvania, Vermont, Virginia, and Washington. This has been Lynn Curry reading the Bloomington Pantograph for Tuesday, August 4th, 2020.